This episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by listeners like you. Just go to, if you would like to contribute to our legal fund, go to GoFundMe.com/Nerd and Tie. Or if you'd like to sponsor an episode for just $20, we'd read your name here and say something pretty nice about you. To find out about that, go to NerdandTie.com, look on the right side for the sponsor page, or go to the show page for the Nerd and Tie podcast, and there's information on there too. It's fun, it's exciting, and it helps us eat. How else can Gen eat a sandwich if there's no money for Gen to eat a sandwich? On this episode of Nerd and Tie, Wonder Woman is just crushing it at the box office. Wonder Woman's also, though, been banned in Lebanon? Star Wars turned 40 since last episode. Tom Hardy is going to star in the Venom movie. Colossus Con had to rebrand after a Colossal Con complaint. And a guy with a bunch of guns did a thing. So, that's not good. And, welcome to Nerd and Tie, even if none of my co-hosts can see me right now. You at home can see me, because my camera is turned off on Skype. That's my own fault.
That works.
There we go.
I was worried for a second.
Now I understand.
Yes, no, it's when I reconnected to... We had some technical difficulties with the call ahead of time, and there was some... A little bit of not fun there, but we're back. We're here.
At last we see the light.
Yeah, and it's a show. This is our 100th episode.
100, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
My video is a little janky right now so if on the recording. Sorry about that, but the audio should be good. The audio version on the, you know, regular podcast should be 5x5. I'm sure someone will tell us if it's not. but it's 100 episodes. Nick, does it feel like it's been 100 episodes?
No, I was shocked when you reminded me of that. I was just like, oh, 100 episodes. Oh, right. We've literally done 100 of these.
We've done 100, and that's not even counting the specials.
That's insane.
Yeah, and again, does it feel like you've done 100 Nerd and Ties?
No, because I haven't.
That's right.
Oh,
you haven't even done 20.
Then maybe a 10th.
Drop and record me 20. Go. Private.
Oh man, we got a big show for you guys, and we're gonna start out by talking about what everyone is talking about right now, and that is Wonder Woman. Holy crap, Wonder Woman.
Yeah. So, I've never been so happy to be wrong, because like as everyone who listens to the show knows, my job is that I temper expectations. I call myself the realist of the group, and you know, after three horrible movies, I did not see a whole lot of potential in another DC extended universe movie. And I actually just saw this movie today, and I really liked it. It was not perfect. I wish I loved it as much as everyone else seems to, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's okay, so let's be really clear. It's not a perfect movie. I think the entire framing mechanism around the movie is unnecessary and actually takes away a little bit from it. With, you know, the it's not really a spoiler to say that, you know, obviously this movie takes place during World War One for the most part, but there's a little bookend scenes in the current day with Diana looking at a photograph. And
what we have to know, she needed to have those scenes looking at the photograph so that she could get emails from Batman, because DC doesn't know what to do if Batman isn't involved somehow.
Well,
so
I think it's that they don't trust the audience to understand that, like, you would, that the movie's not taking place in the time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think DC trusts us enough yet. And so I'm sure that was the studio's request to put those scenes on. But
yeah, no, I agree that they were dumb.
But I'll take that little bit of dumbness for overall a pretty great movie.
My biggest pet peeve, without getting into too many spoilers, because I'm a bit of an old school Wonder Woman fan, is could it have been easily resolved if I could just get into the word processor they type the script on, I would highlight the name Zeus and then replace all with Hera. That's my biggest problem with the movie, honestly.
Right. It's mostly because they're going with something more similar to her New 52 origin.
Which is getting done away with anyway.
I know, but it wasn't when they had to write this.
I know.
Rebirth wasn't a thing when they started writing this movie.
I get that. It's frustrating that not just that in the context of the New 52 stuff, but just that every time, even when the Amazons talk about Zeus, it's with complete reverence. And it's like, no, you have a feminist icon,
yeah,
and you're having her constantly praise mythology's biggest serial rapist. Good job. You suck.
You have to divorce the Wonder Woman Greek gods from the real Greek gods, the same way you have to divorce the Thor Norse gods from the real Norse gods.
I would argue that I don't, because like in George Perez Wonder Woman, the Greek gods are literally the frickin' Greek gods. This isn't Thor, where they're extra-dimensional aliens. They're literally the Greek gods. Hey,
you don't know that my gods aren't extra-dimensional aliens.
The Ares in this movie is definitely the Greek version of Ares.
Right.
That's how he acts.
Yeah,
grumpy.
I'm just going to have to disagree with you on that. It's also, frankly, there are so many contradictory versions of the... Let's remember that Ares was Mars for a long time in the comics, for decades. Like, they did not care about... Yes, George Perez made some modifications, but the Wonder Woman comics for decades did not give two craps about accurately representing the Greek gods.
But George Perez did, and they even used the George Perez design for Ares. So I'm going to side with the Perez.
The George Perez design for Ares is actually not all that different from the classic design of Ares if you go back to the original comics.
Still going to go with the Perez because the Perez origin is the best one.
I think we're fighting over... Okay, so...
You guys are fighting over the tiniest little things.
I know. Have you not listened to the show before again?
There's not much to crap on for it.
No, that's the thing. Like, I will say that I cried multiple times during this film. When she climbs out of the trenches into No Man's Land, which is in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler to say that that happens.
That is going to become... That is right up there with Christopher Reeve pulling his coat open in the original 70s Superman movie.
Yeah.
That is going to be go down in cinema history.
That alley fight was like... which is also in trailers, is 1,000% a reference to the mugging in the alley in the... the Christopher Reeves Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Where he catches, yeah, with the bullet, yeah, like down to showing the bullet in the hand. I'm like, oh god, that was great.
It was really charming. I loved that.
I love so much. I love the fact that, a lot of the mistaken thing talked about. Like, I've seen some weird people talk about how Diana was naive about like certain things. Like, I love the fact that she was not uneducated about sex. Like, they didn't play up that as a naivete. That, like, a lot of people misinterpreted some of that stuff. That, like, I don't think it's meant to imply that Diana is in any way virginal.
No, I didn't get that impression at all.
There are some people who really did, and I'm like,
that's insane.
Like, I mean, and
how could you possibly get that from that scene?
I have always advocated for the bisexual Wonder Woman, because that's what really, like, that comes through really in Gail Simone's run, The Circle, also.
Greg Rucka, like, full-on stated it not that long ago, so, yeah. I mean, It's what a. I gotta say, who really got to shine in this one? Gal Gadot.
Oh my God, she's amazing.
Well, what was weird was I don't know if you guys remember. Everyone really seemed to love her in Batman v Superman. I was not on that train. I thought that she was less boring than everything else, but that didn't really feel like a compliment, so I didn't really want to give that. But like, when it's amazing how when she gets like a director who like isn't a total hack, how amazing the movie can come out. And I'm sorry that not to crap on a guy while he's down, because I know Zack Snyder has some serious family issues, and I feel for him, but that doesn't retroactively make his directing better.
No, it doesn't.
And I'm sorry, I don't think he had any idea how to handle this character, and it was amazing just night and day between her performance in that movie what a great character she is in this movie.
Oh, well, I think that everyone was poorly handled in Batman vs. Superman. She was just the least worst handled, only because he didn't need to make a plot point with her. And so she just got to walk in and be awesome.
Well, she had to check her emails from Batman.
Well, but I would just say, like, well, first off, like, Gal Gadot is always the nervous point because she just has, like, not a big resume. Like, her like, the Fast and Furious movies don't really show how well anybody can act.
What do you mean? Are you saying the increasingly extraterrestrial pronunciations of Fambly from Vin Diesel aren't acting?
Well, the man is a tree, so...
Fambly. Say it with me, everyone.
But I was, you know, it's like, like, it's her, like, her, just her performance. It's just so perfect. It's like I love like when she sees a baby.
Yeah, that was
great.
She's
so excited to see a baby because she's never seen one before. it's not much of a spoiler to say that, like, there aren't the Amazons, because they're introduced at the beginning of the movie through, like, a cutscene explaining this, that the Amazons were all pretty much created as an adult. So Diana grew up as, like, the only child on Themyscira. Yeah, I always say it wrong.
Plus, added bonus, the Amazon general, Antiope was Princess Buttercup from Princess Bride.
All of our princesses are generals.
Freaking badass.
All of our princesses are generals now.
Buttercup got swole, you guys.
I know, right? but like, it's I can't, like, you know, see, the problem is that what the amazing thing about this film is that it was really, like, I think we're all talking about it as being remarkable because all of the DC movies have just been terrible so far, and this is a genuinely good movie. I want to make sure that we don't, like, overhype it because, like, is it the best superhero movie I've seen in years? No. Frankly, Guardians of the Galaxy isn't really a superhero movie. We lie when we say that's a superhero movie. That's a space opera.
Set in the Marvel universe.
Set in a superhero universe, but like there are, like, I'd say Ant-Man might even have been a better superhero movie in some ways. Like I don't know. I like this better than Ant-Man. I like this better than Ant-Man. But like, what I'm saying is that, like, there are superhero movies of a better quality that we have gotten in the last few years. But this this is a good one. This is a good one, which is really a stressful thing when it's there have been less than a dozen female-led superhero movies ever made. Ever.
And most of them are pretty bad.
And most of them are pretty bad because, like, Catwoman is awful, not because, you know, the Oscar award-winning lead of Halle Berry, but because it was a crappy script and an awful director.
And the video game is... as bad.
Yeah. But, like, so there's this conventional wisdom in Hollywood, in quotes, that guys won't go see, like, that women superhero movies aren't good. And it's because they've been making bad ones. So we've got like a good. Okay, I like Tank Girl, but Tank Girl doesn't count because they made Tank Girl as weird as Tank Girl, the comic.
Yeah, and
so
though we really like it now, at the time of its release,
I really liked it then, but it's really an inaccessible comic to make a movie out of.
I haven't seen that movie.
it's very
what
Tank
time
Girl.
You visit, I'll show it to you.
It's very
okay.
It's you know
really
it's,
good. Tank Girl, but like
it captures the tone of the Tank Girl comics. Unfortunately, that's a really inaccessible tone. Wonder Woman gets to be this great, like, powerful story, and it's oh god, and that's I think that's what we. It also, it just it takes the pressure off. Like I gotta say, like Marvel Studios has to be like thanking the gods that like the pressure to be like the first, like, good performing like.
Female-led
superhero movie is just off of their plate. I will say so
on the other hand, DC actually beat them to the punch on something for once.
Yeah,
and
Jesus
they
Christ.
Did it with they did it really well.
Yeah, they finally. So there's some fun facts. This had 100.5 million, I think, was the opening weekend total. It's right around 101 is the biggest opening weekend for a film directed by a woman. It beat out one of the 50 Shades movies. And those movies deserve to get beaten on everything. I hate those. But biggest film
director. Everyone else with a brain.
A thing no one has actually mentioned is that it's already the highest grossing film set in World War One.
Wow.
Of all time.
That is both awesome and
it is the highest grossing World War One film, and it's just because there's not a lot of World War One films.
Well, that's because World War One is an ugly, terrible war where there were no good guys, which is why it was perfect for
that's
this
why
movie.
I think it's a, like because obviously Wonder Woman's origins are always linked into World War II in the comics, and that's historically where, you know, because that of when the character was created. But I think setting it in World War One works so much better because the idea of war itself as the enemy fits in so much better with World War One than World War Two, because World War Two's got, like, historically, Hitler, you know? Like,
I was about to say, yeah. Like,
there's
that,
a guy.
That's the problem. You can't make a movie where the theme is all war is bad and there's bad guys on all sides when Nazis are involved.
Right. World War One, though.
Yeah.
World War One, though, like, is yes, there were like people who, like there's like is all shades of gray, like less gray and more like yes, there were invaders, but that whole thing was like a series of treaties that kind of pulled countries into directions that they had to do something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's so convoluted in how it started that I could almost believe a God of War had to orchestrate it.
Right. And so, you know, I obviously don't want to do any spoilers for the last act, even though I totally saw it coming. I called it. But I think that's good. Can I also talk about the music for a second here? The music in this movie. Now, I know that technically it's a theme written by Hans Zimmer for and some other guy for Batman versus Superman, the Wonder Woman theme is the first memorable movie theme to come out of a superhero movie in a while. Like, Hans Zimmer, like, wrote the music for Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel, and he did the Dark Knight trilogy, and can you hum a few bars of the Superman theme from Man of Steel? You're just making up notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know if that was anywhere near right or not.
Yeah, actually, I do.
Shut up.
That was right.
You're. I know you're right, but I'm trying to prove a point.
Stop.
But the fact is, that's not a memorable theme. You probably just went and looked up that theme recently, didn't you? I'm not putting you on camera if you're going to shake your head.
I didn't. I'm sorry. I, dude, I've I spent a lot of time watching. Look, I psyched myself up for that movie. I watched that trailer several times, analyzing things that didn't pay off, by the way.
But that theme isn't a theme. You know what I mean? Like, most people don't know that those bars off the top of your head. Like, again, right. Did you know those were the Man of Steel theme bars?
No,
you didn't. We could have lied to you and said that was the Batman music from The Dark Knight Rises, and you probably wouldn't have known, because Hans Zimmer can't write a theme to save his life, which is why I believe I'm giving credit to his collaborator. Like, he gets all this credit for Pirates of the Caribbean, but Klaus Bolt or Blatt or what's his name actually did all the music for the Curse of the Black Pearl. Like, Hans Zimmer can't write a hero theme. He can't. And like, the only Marvel thing, most of those Marvel themes have a couple different composers. Silvestri wrote some of them. The only Marvel theme I can think of, like, where I'd ever can ever like come up with a theme, is the Guardians of the Galaxy theme.
I can remember Cap's theme.
Okay, well, I can't. I mean, I believe you. That, that one's. Sounds a lot like the John Williams Superman theme. Do 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 do.
I guess.
Well, at least you're humming it does. I don't know whether the actual song sounds like that.
I guess I don't hear it until you bring it up that way.
So that's a good super.
I can start here.
But I don't know. It's so. But what I want to say is that, like,
songs are a lost art, though.
No, but what I'm saying is, what I'm so happy about this movie is that. Well, I'm not saying they're not a lost art. Hum Pacific Rim. Yeah, right. So Pacific Rim has a memorable theme. Pirates of the Caribbean, all of those have memorable themes. John Williams' new work for the Star Wars movies, like, Ray's theme is memorable. But it's John Williams. Of course Ray's theme is memorable.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly am not as big a fan of Wonder Woman's theme. In fact, I found it really distracting have something so electric guitar-y over a World War One fight.
It's an electric cello.
I didn't like it.
Okay, I like it.
If anything, it just took me out of the moment for a second.
See, for me, it reinforced the moment. Like, I jumped up and was like, yeah, in that moment, like, when her theme comes in. Like, there's little hints of it when she's a kid. And, like, you can hear it in the soundtrack, and I'm like, I'm a sucker for leitmotifs like that. So,
like, normally I am. I didn't really stick out to me, aside from that electric bit that, again, just took me out of a World War One fight.
Oh, I guess for me it doesn't remotely. Disagree.
No, overall, no, it was a good movie. It's worth everyone's time. Go see it.
Everyone should go see it, you know, unless you can't.
Yeah, unless you live in Lebanon.
Oh.
Because for reasons, it's been banned there, and not for the reasons you think. Lebanon has actually banned showing Wonder Woman because Gal Gadot had served in the Israeli army, in the Israeli military, which is mandatory for Israeli citizens to do, and the Lebanese Ministry of Economy and Trade has requested the ban, even though it kind of took Lebanese theaters by surprise, because the film itself has really nothing to do with Israel at all. The reasoning for all this is because Lebanon and Israel are still technically at war right now, even though they've had a ceasefire since about 2006. So, yeah, I mean, there were
everything,
only like
Everything about Israel's relations with everywhere else in the Middle East is really ugly, though. Like, literally everything.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to sound like I'm oversimplifying it, but it's just, it's ugly.
Yeah.
It's been ugly. It continues to be ugly.
Yeah, so, they've kind of had to fight for themselves ever since they became a country.
Yeah, but
it's also a little more complicated than that.
More complicated than that because it was also
oversimplifying.
Because they became a country by sending, you know, World War II hardened vets into already occupied areas where people were trying to defend elderly and children from, you know, European veterans who wanted homeland for their own religion, and it got ugly really fast.
But to kind of talk about this,
like Wonder Woman, it was ugly on all sides.
the Lebanon issue, though, more has to do with the fact that their two countries are still technically at war from that mid-2000s incident. And so the government department made a recommendation to ban the movie, and then the government banned the movie. They actually tried to get Batman versus Superman banned a couple years ago when that came out, just for the same reason, because of Gal Gadot's involvement in the film. But obviously, since she wasn't the central character, like she's not the lead actor in that film, so it went through. But that's also why the theaters thought that this was still going to go through and still get shown, because Batman versus Superman like still got shown. But I think obviously because Gal Gadot is, you know, front and center, she is Wonder Woman in this movie, that that's what caused the decision to still go through to actually ban it. But it's,
I get it, but it's still an awful decision.
Oh, it's awful. It's only 15 theaters that we're going to show it because, you know, it's Lebanon.
Lebanon. Yeah.
It's Lebanon, so it's only got 14 more theaters than Lebanon, Indiana. That's the joke. There is a Lebanon, Indiana. It's about a 45-minute drive from me right now.
You're not going to be able to say that for much longer.
No, I'm not. Because going back to Wisconsin.
Back to the Wisco.
Yeah, I don't. I that just sucks. Because, again, it is a very good movie, and it's has some very strong and, I think, always important themes, and it is a crying shame.
It's a superhero film not shot from the male gaze.
Yeah, that in and of itself. Ugh.
Yeah, no, it's, and the film's doing really well internationally too, so.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Yeah, it's, we're at, I think the last numbers I saw was $223 million is the total, like, U.S. and international combined. And at a budget of $150 million, that means the film only has to do another, like, so for the film to be considered successful financially, it only needs to do $300 million.
Wow,
but it's
so,
already done 223.
Yeah, wow. That's,
yeah, so that's, like, people talked about, like, how Wonder Woman had this small budget, but I think that, like, when you compare to, like, you know, the massive, you know, Batman vs. Superman had this huge, gigantic budget. But I think that actually, like, having the, like, I mean, $150 million, first off, is not a small budget by far. You know, Deadpool was made for, like, 90. And, like, I mean,
you could have fooled me that the budget was small because the costuming and the sets were so on point.
Yeah.
I'm...
Yeah, so it's, I mean, that's, the nice thing is, though, is that takes a lot of the pressure off, though, because, you know, if this movie does $300 million, which I don't think actually Man of Steel only did about that.
You know, Man of Steel did not, I don't even think Man of Steel deserved what it made, but that's me.
I'm going to say Man of Steel deserved it more than Batman versus Superman.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Man of Steel, so my problem with Man of Steel is not that I hate the movie. I don't hate the movie. I hate it as a Superman movie. Like, if you called him Rocket Man, I might have actually enjoyed it.
My problem with Man of Steel is that it has interesting ideas that it doesn't even try to explore thoroughly enough, that had they actually done something with it and, you know, done a proper three-act story structure, it could have been a good movie. Like, I watched a video essay not long ago, and I'm going to say that I was wrong, in part, in saying that the problem was that Jonathan Kent acts like a sociopath. I don't think that's necessarily the inherent
problem.
He
sure does act like an idiot.
No, he acts like an idiot and a sociopath. But it's not, the problem isn't that he says, Clark, we don't have to save people. The problem is that that never leads up to a internal conflict for Clark where he has to decide, my space dad wants me to save people and my Earth dad doesn't want me to, and him coming to a conclusion from that.
Yeah.
Now, had they done that, that would have been a great movie. But they didn't.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, the ending doesn't culminate in anything other than murder.
Yeah.
Bloody, bloody murder.
This video is going to be so janky. I was looking at the CPU numbers.
Oh, dear.
So
well,
I'm apologizing to our YouTube viewers ahead of time.
But yeah, It is a it back to I guess back on topic. It's still just a shame that Lebanon is blocking this movie because there's a lot of good.
Here, we'll throw up the title card to save some CPU cycles because hey, it's Wonder Woman.
Yay! Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman. You know what else is really good?
Apache Chief? No, wait.
No. No.
Can we have a ticker in the corner of how many times Nick says no?
I'm not
going to beat Shia LaBeouf someday.
No, that actually would take CPU cycles for me to do that.
Yeah, no.
I could. I mean, I'm technically capable of it.
No, I kid. Let us move on to other things that are good.
I adult. Move on to things that are good, Nick.
So, between our last episode and this episode, a rather fortuitous day was upon us. It was the 40th. That's right, the 40th anniversary of when the original Star Wars, retroactively titled Episode 4, A New Hope, when the original Star Wars hit theaters for the first time. That was now officially 40 years ago.
Do you want to know how I learned that?
How did you learn that, Jen?
Because at Shopko, we have the 40-year anniversary Hot Wheels Star Wars cars. And I was putting them on the end cap. And I was like, oh, hey, it's 40 years old.
I think I became aware that Star Wars was turning 40 like the week before.
I'm turning off my camera to Skype. So, guys, you didn't get disconnected. I just turned it off to save CPU cycles.
Okay. Yeah, the only reason I found out that it was turning 40 was I was in an action figure aisle and I saw some Star Wars action figures that were labeled 40th anniversary. I'm like, oh,
that's a thing.
That's a thing. Cool.
That's a thing.
So,
I just sort of did math.
My dad probably just went and like saw it and was like, dang it, I'm old.
Well, I'm just
saw it in theaters.
Generally, I don't think about how long ago Star Wars came out. That's not something that I math much.
Well, you know what it is that I know that Star Wars came out in 1977. I also know that I was born in 1980. So there's this date that is kind of looming up ahead for me.
Uh-oh.
In a few years. And so I, trust me when I say I notice when things are confusing.
No, I gotcha.
Yeah. I think my dad took my mom out on a date to see either that one or one of the other Star Wars films in theaters.
I know.
Mom's not like really into that stuff, but it's still like really cute.
My dad first saw Star Wars because one day at Edgewood College back in 1977, he ran out of beer and decided to go to a movie. And then he saw a poster that looked interesting It was called Star Wars. He got back and told his roommate, tomorrow we're going to go see this movie again because it's the best movie I've ever seen.
That's awesome.
That's pretty, you know, I actually...
And he totally did.
I actually cannot remember when I actually first saw Star Wars.
I can't remember mine either.
I like
it's your oldest fandom. Everyone has a fandom that they've been in so long that they can't actually remember how long they've been in it.
Oh, well, that's like three fandoms for me. That's Star Trek, yeah, Star Wars, and Doctor Who.
That's like so much of my life, though. Like, I can't
remember,
that's
Star
like,
Wars and Godzilla.
Exact point.
Like, I remember when I first saw Indiana Jones. Like, I must have seen one of, like, I don't know when Star Wars first got shown on television, because that is the possible earliest it could have been. So it actually, like, I must have been, like, at least, like, 8 or something when I saw it, because we had to have a VCR.
I think I was about 5 when I first paid attention to it. But my parents constantly had it on in the background.
Yeah, you know the thing is, the difference between you and me is that, like, as a kid in the 80s, most people didn't have VCRs when I was really little. You know what I mean? Like, because you're born in 89. You're born in 89. Like, we had a VCR in 89, but I turned 9 that year. You know, so it's like, but I know it was on VHS because, like, I saw it on a television screen for sure, because it was, whether it was on TV or on a videotape, I was too young to see it in the theaters when it first came out, and my parents, you know, I have an older sister and a younger brother, like, taking us to go see, like, even though technically I, like, could have gone and seen Jedi as a child, there is no way that was ever going to happen. It's, I don't know, it's like Star Wars is just such a, like, especially that first one is such a monumental reason why everyone should meddle with George Lucas whenever they can, because that produced some of the greatest films ever.
I remember when I first saw them, when I first, like, actually paid attention to it, because, like I said, the movies were on in the background almost constantly when I was growing up.
Yeah.
But I remember my parents, both of them being like, we're going to watch Star Wars. And I'm like, oh, which one? And then they're like, no, this one's just called Star Wars. And it's very important that you pay attention to this movie. And I did. And my mind was just blown. I don't know. Like, I just, my little kid mind was just.
Yeah. Because it's an amazing looking film.
Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing movie, just period.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, obviously Empire's better, but as a film. But the first one is the one that's going to blow your mind away as a child. Like, I don't think you really start to appreciate Empire till you get older.
Like, yeah, I can agree with that.
It's, and Empire holds up better, but, like, as a kid, like, as what the film we now call A New Hope was just, I remember when that transition happened, by the way. I remember the first time, like, because I'll tell you, like, when you're growing up and you're, like, watching Star Wars, and kids today, they don't know that we just called it Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was just Star Wars. And, like, even after, like, the second release, they added that episode 4, A New Hope, to the thing. But literally no one remembered that. So I remember when I got, like, the first time A New Hope was written on a VHS box was when they did the remasters. Not the special edition, when they did the cleanup remasters.
Yep, like, I have that copy.
Yeah, but
I have more VHS copies of that movie than I care to admit. But.
And that is the first version where A New Hope showed up in, like, little letters underneath Star Wars. It was like Star Wars, A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that and being, like, really confused, because my brain had never logged that in the opening crawl. You know what I mean?
I remember that. A similar feeling, because my parents had always called it Star Wars, and then I saw the A New Hope, and I just assumed it had always been there. Like,
yeah,
I was just like, huh, well, I wonder if this is just one of those, because I was used to being more nerdy than my parents, who got me into nerdy things and noticing little details that they didn't care about.
And
so
you had never, like it's been on the theatrical release since, like, unless you saw it in 1977, it said A New Hope in the movie, but nobody called it that. No one called it that. It was just Star Wars. And then it was the special edition, made A New Hope bigger on the box. And then it really, really, nobody called it Episode 4, A New Hope, until the prequels came out. And it was just because we had then gotten to the point where there are so many frickin' Star Wars movies. Well, when there are Star Wars movies in the theaters, it becomes a different, like, you know, you have to be specific. But that meant, and but then there was this whole generation, like, you know, a 20-year-old today came, you know, was born after those boxes that said A New Hope came out. Like, they own, like, they naturally think of it as A New Hope and not just Star Wars. Like, I refer to it as A New Hope, but I refer to it as A New Hope, but I think of it as Star Wars.
But, yeah, but that's, like, that's so relatable to so many different things between, like, our collective generation and, like, the newer generation. Like, we remember dial-up.
I remember I remember like, BBSs.
Like, right? Like, we remember stuff that those kids, like, don't think about ever.
But there's a jump between even, like, say, me and you, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, I remember VCRs being a fancy thing only a few people had.
Like, everybody had one.
I remember the ocean dub of Dragon Ball Z.
I remember Betamax being, like, a current thing.
Nope, cassettes.
Because I know someone who has Star Wars on Betamax.
I remember when those little... when those cameras that took, like, 1 inch by 2/3 inch Polaroids were really popular.
Yeah, I had one of those. It was like oblong.
Yeah.
The camera itself was oblong. Yeah, and it had like, they would print out of the camera and they had like sticky on the back so you could instantly like stick them to places. I had one of those cameras.
There's ads for them in the background of the first season of Smallville, and I die every time I notice that ad because I'm like, that never caught on.
One of my favorite things is watching old commercials. Like, oh, I love, just like, we had this tape of, like, Hook that we taped from TV, and it's got, like, these ancient, like, Christmas commercials from the 90s, and it's so good.
I somewhere have all of, like, I have the Deep Space Nine pilot taped off of television with all the commercials intact, and, like, all the local Milwaukee commercials.
Eric's got a bunch of tapes.
I don't know where that is.
Planet.
Find that, man.
Oh man,
because kids, you see what you used to do if you ever wanted to rewatch a show, you used to tape it and then keep it. You couldn't go back and, but also like you would tape an important episode you might want to watch again. So I had all the first episodes of every Star Trek and the last episode of every Star Trek, but that was it. Like I didn't have like most of the middle stuff because you didn't think to tape it. You know, like you would just be watching it. You don't know it's a great episode until after it's aired, and then maybe you get lucky on syndication and get to tape it.
One of my worst / weirdest habits growing up was I would tape things off TV and obsessively rewatch them to look for details and weird stuff. And with anime, it got weirder because I would tape it off TV and then look for the edits. Like I would catalog the TV edits. Sometimes and sometimes it would be with stuff that I already owned, like the uncut VHS of it, because I had it before it aired, and I would just catalog what changes were made to the TV run. It's bad, you guys. I am not. There's a reason I did not have many friends growing up.
So speaking of things that makes everyone look at things weird, I guess.
Yeah.
Because of time here. Again?
Yeah. So going back to, gosh, the early 2000s, those movies came out. With Spider-Man,
I think 2000,
surprisingly.
2008 is the film you're thinking of.
That was the third one?
Yeah. Because I think there's only 4 years between that and the reboot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So late 2000s. So we remember the old, when the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films, and we were not expecting it when Sony announced that it's going to be making a Venom movie using Eddie Brock, like kind of the same Eddie Brock from that third Spider-Man film a while ago.
The same character. The
same
character.
Different version, different iteration.
Yeah. This one. Brock,
could have done so many other Spider-Man, so many other Venoms. But anyways.
I know. But anyways, that's not the big part. The big part is that Tom Hardy is slated to play Eddie Brock in the upcoming film.
Tom Hardy, which, Venom? Like,
I can kind of see it. I mean, he's a great actor. I really like him.
I don't like the Eddie Brock character.
So,
like, the problem isn't... it's like, I like Venom. I like Tom Hardy. I don't really like Eddie Brock.
So I'm going to say this. So the problem isn't necessarily that Tom Hardy's playing Venom or even that he's playing Eddie Brock. It's the fact that, okay, so let's go back to the fact that this movie is happening.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Yeah. There is a Venom movie happening that is not connected to the current on-screen Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How are they going to make this
Sony
movie?
Sony is still trying to do these Spider-Man spin-offs that were a terrible idea back during the Amazing Spider-Man films.
So
they haven't given up on those.
So the current name that people are calling Sony's little universe thing is the Sony Marvel Universe, or SMU, as I'm going to call it now. SMU. So there are two films happening in SMU, and they are Silver and Black, the Silver Sable Black Cat movie, which is a weird movie only because the two characters don't really have anything to do with each other than having colors in their names. But at least those two characters' origins don't require Spider-Man to exist. Like, Black Cat doesn't need Spider-Man to be Black Cat. How do you make a Venom movie without Spider-Man? The Black Symbiote is... like, the only reason why Venom looks so much like Spider-Man in his design is because of Spider-Man.
The symbiote latched onto Spider-Man. Yeah, that's... and honestly, you know, if they really... with Spider-Man tying into the MCU right now, if they really wanted to, they could do the actual origin of the black suit. And, you know, I'm not saying that I really would love it if Marvel did a Secret Wars movie, but I would love it if Marvel did a Secret Wars movie, and I want that more than a Venom
But they
movie.
Don't even have to do a Secret Wars movie. You could literally tie it into the Infinity War stuff, just because all you really need is for Spider-Man to go to space.
I know. I really like Secret Wars. It's an awesome book.
I understand. I'm just saying if you wanted to make a Venom movie now, but even like doing it like so,
hey, just,
I mean,
Spider-Man goes to space. He needs a new costume.
And actually, here's the thing. So Spider-Man 3 was not a good movie, but it had nothing to do with the modifications they made to the Venom origin in it.
No.
You know, like it had to
that
do
wasn't the problem at all.
Right. It had to do with Tobey Maguire doing his Saturday Night
emo
Fever
jazz
walk
hands.
And emo jazz hands and like.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the studio forcing Sam Raimi to include stuff that he didn't want in the
like
movie
Venom.
In the first place.
Like Venom.
Ironically enough, Venom.
I will actually say that, like, to Sam Raimi's credit and to Topher Grace was well cast as a mirror of Tobey Maguire. Like,
no. Venom wasn't... ironically, Venom wasn't the problem with that movie.
No.
The problem really was more that it was unfocused, and Sam Raimi is just, he was doing classic Ditko Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he was being forced to do not Ditko Spider-Man things with Ditko Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work. It's like trying to, it would be like trying to adapt, it would be like trying to adapt a Victor Zsasz Batman story with Adam West.
Oh my God, I would pay to see that movie so much. Oh my God. Like, I would, oh my God, I would love to read a Victor Zsasz Batman 66 comic.
Old chum.
Let's just rewrite Shadow of the Bat 1 through 4 with lines from Batman 66. Just keep all the artwork the same. Just rewrite all of Batman's lines. I have those comics. I could probably scan them, like scan a few pages and start inserting like actual quotes. I have to find where I put those. Oh. Because I have Shadow of the Bat 1 through 4.
What like, has science done?
Because I was just buying comics at the time.
Like you do.
Yeah. Dude. Why are they making this Venom movie?
But yeah, we're having great ideas like this. Well, meanwhile, Sony is still trying to do their bizarre spy. I'm surprised that with how disjointed this idea is, I'm surprised that they haven't given up on their stupid Sinister Six idea. I mean,
well,
because that was going to be a movie.
Well, I mean, we don't know what they're going to do with it. You know, it's all going to depend on how the Venom movie goes. Like, because they were setting up that Sinister Six movie at the end of Amazing 2.
Amazing Spider-Man 2, yeah.
You know, wouldn't it be fucked up? Sorry for the language filter. On the 100th episode, I dropped an F-bomb 51 minutes
good
in.
Job. Ruined.
Good job.
Episode ruined.
But we went 51 minutes without me swearing, and I just went and ruined that.
Out of you, question mark?
But, like, wouldn't it be weird if they set these movies in the Amazing universe? And just never showed Andrew Garfield? I'm
just
saying.
Drop back, everyone.
Yes.
Just continued it.
Okay, we should...
What is even going on? Okay, let's
go,
go
to the con scene. Let's go to the con scene. So, there was a little chain of California comic conventions called Colossus Con that started last year. Just little, as the best description I've heard these as is postage stamp sized comic conventions.
Cute.
There was one in Pleasantville, California. They held two of them under the name Colossus Con, and it's run by Colossus Girl Entertainment. Well, they've been forced to rename all their conventions because back in February, another convention, the anime convention Colossal Con, based out of Ohio, filed a trademark complaint against Colossus Con. This is stupid. Okay, so
it's weird.
So okay, so what it is the Colossal Con is saying the Colossus Con's name is too close and it's infringing. And I understand to a degree why they're making this complaint in the fact that there is some similarity, and you know sometimes people have typed in Colossus while searching for colossal, but they are literally two different English language words, and like. Yes, I would understand if these two conventions were in the same state, in the same region. Mm-hmm. Colossal Con is running their main con in Ohio and are doing an East Coast con, but they're not doing anything on the West Coast. Colossal Con is an anime con, while Colossus Con is a comic convention. And the fact is that the convention community has gotten on for decades with very similar named cons. For God's sakes, there are literally two unrelated cons named Mars Con. One in Virginia, one in Minnesota. No association. They just happily coexist, both being called the same thing. But so it seems really a little anti-community. Now, they do have a legal right to file a convention, and I don't believe anything ever went to court. I believe the Colossus Con renamed themselves voluntarily. Their Merced, California event has been renamed California Republic Comic Con, and their planned event in Campbell, California is now Campbell Con. We don't know what the Pleasanton Con, if the Pleasanton Con, they have not announced the Pleasanton Con taking place a second time because it just took place in April, I believe. So what they're going, if they hold that one again, if they're going to rename it, we don't know. But it just seems bizarre and anti-community. I'm sorry. It's like
the I don't want to play too much devil's advocate, but I had for some reason or another, I did end up talking to some people who were closer to the or who were close to this incident, I guess. And from what I understand, the Colossus Con website was set up to look almost identical to the Colossal Con one. So, like, I can understand that part of it.
I can't speak to that. I can say that they are using Wix, which is a very template-driven system.
Mm.
I don't know about Colossal Con, but
templates.
But I mean, it's honestly, mm-hmm. I don't think there was significant confusion. And like, let's remember that Colossal Con is run by someone who at one point defended the Kalahari. Selling off its animal cubs to exotic meat companies, so...
Ooh, gross. Kind of really gross.
That's just fun. I mean, because he... I want to be clear. I'm not saying this person had literally nothing to do with the actual actions, but they notoriously are well known to have defended the person, so it's just kind of like a... You know, there's just... I have a hard time thinking of... good faith. Now, I mean, I will say that there is an argument for the confusion that has nothing to do with anything the Colossus Con would have done on purpose. Because, I mean, their logos were completely different. Unfortunately, because it's a Wix site, it doesn't archive.org properly, so I can't pull up the way Wix templates work. I can't pull up the old website and do a direct comparison.
What I had complained to me, so
yeah, the Colossal Con website though was kind of generic looking. Like, it's not a bad looking site, but it's kind of like every convention website, so
right.
I don't want to, like, without the ability to, like, unless someone could provide me screenshots, I don't want to, like, get into that too much, because, you know, what looks similar to one person might not look similar to a designer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's because there's so many common elements. But I will say, in the defense of Colossal Con, if you search for Colossus Con on Google, one of the suggested results is Colossus Con, Ohio. So people looking for Colossal Con are typing in Colossus Con into Google because they don't know how to spell. So, I don't think that that's Colossus's Con's fault, and I don't believe that anyone would realistically confuse the events. But since Colossal Con is now starting to expand beyond their main convention with, like, Colossal East, I get it. I just don't agree with it. You know what I mean? It's like,
I
see where they're coming from. I just also still think it's stupid.
I gotcha.
Like, I see how a reasonable human being got there, but I wouldn't have. If in the same position, if I were them, it's not a decision I would have made.
Okay.
Speaking of decisions, I know there's no transition here.
There's no good.
Yeah, there's no good transition. This is just insane and awful, and let's just tackle it. Like the insane, awful thing it is. So, at Phoenix Comic Con, a man was arrested after some vigilant security and congoers noticed some suspicious things about him.
Nope, wrong. Social media.
Oh, yeah. Okay, excuse me.
Yeah, no one noticed at the con.
From posts on social media, yeah, this guy was caught carrying four guns. Four guns at the Phoenix Comic Con.
And, quote-unquote, multiple knives.
And multiple knives. Yeah, this was Now, they caught him early in the weekend, which resulted in all weapons proper otherwise being banned for the rest of the con. And from what I under... that was confirmed that he was targeted. Was his target confirmed? Was that an actual
it's
thing?
It's confirmed. It's so, yeah. He
okay,
was
yeah.
going after...
He was yeah. going after Jason David Frank,
yeah.
which... What?
yeah.
I mean...
He's,
yeah, so...
Yeah, holy shit. He was targeting Jason David Frank and
the
police.
Green Power Ranger and the police. Yeah,
and the police.
That's...
And the only reason why he got caught is because someone who knew him, I don't remember if it's a family member or just someone who he socially knew on social media, saw posts that made them believe he was going to be a threat to people. And so they called the Phoenix police. And so, so this guy, I don't have his name up in front of me right now, but this guy steadfastly avoided weapons checkpoints. And even though weapons were banned, he said the rules didn't apply to him because he was, in fact, the Punisher. I'm not kidding. He said he was the Punisher. His name is Matthew Sterling. And yeah, it's police have confirmed he was there to kill Jason David Frank. Jason David Frank took a photo with John Bernthal and a Phoenix police officer after this, you know, as a social media response to a guy claiming to be the Punisher trying to murder him. I don't know how much that was in good taste, but I guess if you're the guy being targeted, getting targeted by a shooter, you get to make that visual joke. Like, if you're the guy who the crazy guy was going to murder, like, is it still in bad taste if the potential victim makes the joke?
I still think it's in bad taste, but I'm not a fan of Jason David Frank. I would never advocate him getting murdered.
Yeah, you wouldn't advocate his
insane.
Murder because yeah. that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So the amazing thing to me, and probably the most irritating thing of this whole thing, were the cosplayers who complained about it, the weapons ban.
Yeah, like, that is the thing that I think is almost the bigger thing to discuss from this.
So like, yeah, so many things happened. There were all these people like started complaining because what the con did as a response, and this is kind of a normal thing people do, and it's for both safety reasons and for psychological reasons, because when a big threat like that happens, people often then banned all weapon props.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't matter if it was a space gun or a real gun or a wooden sword or anything, just done. And and there are two reasons you do this. I mean, technically there's a security reason, just in case, because actually there's a real thing that happens sometimes where copycats will try to, like, someone gets caught like that and it's high profile. Actually, often there have been many situations in the past, just in general in society, where people will then copycat and try to imitate it for the notoriety. So that is a genuine security danger. Secondly, there is a psychological safety danger when someone's been, like, if you're at an event, and especially for the staff working that event, like, if you are concerned about guns, you're going to start being jumpy, and you'll just feel safer if you're not visibly seeing weapons everywhere, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it's, and obviously, like, a lot of cons, like, honestly, we need to talk about, you know, eventually, like, this is not the first time that a mass shooting has been narrowly avoided at a convention, because this guy was gonna
tried complaining to me about it, the weapons ban. They're like, don't you think that was overboard? I'm like, okay, this is we once again got lucky.
Yeah, because the Pokemon World Championships in Boston a couple of years ago, two guys who, and again, that was caught because of comments on social media. Two guys loaded their car full of guns and ammo to take to that, and they got stopped by Boston police. Because a concerned person who, like, had been in the same Facebook group as them, like, saw this and was like, holy shit, these guys are going to kill a bunch of people, so we need to stop this. So, the real ridiculousness and this whole thing is the guys from Ultra Sabers are a bunch of dicks is really kind of the takeaway for me. It's because so Ultra Sabers, who are guys who do custom lightsabers. Yeah, I know, like, they were asked by convention staff because, yeah, I know it's a lightsaber, but they were still asked to put it in opaque plastic bags when they sold an item. Which, honestly, like, yeah, I know it's a lightsaber and, you know, whatever. It's obviously never going to be confused for a real weapon. But it's a simple request, and it because when you start nuancing the policy in moments like this, it just makes it so much harder when you have to make volunteers make calls. Like, it when you're trying to organize... Well, actually, they're not volunteers. Phoenix Comic-Con pays all of its staff. When you have to make, like, the on-the-ground staff, though... make those calls, it just gets way too complicated. And so, but the Ultra Sabers guys reportedly, like, weren't, like, even after they requested, were still selling them without the bags, and people were walking around, and so they got booted from the convention because they had been asked to follow a policy and refused to, and talk back, and then because the contract, like any good contract written by a convention, says you can boot a vendor for any reason you want, to cover your ass, they booted them because they'd been specifically asked to follow a policy and they were refusing to, and that would be like one thing, like, you know, okay, so they were a little angry at the policy, they acted a bit like dicks, they got booted, you know, everyone can be forgiven, tempers are high. They made Ultra Sabers went out, printed up flyers and handed them out about how unfairly they'd been treated, paid to get re-entry, like, as attendees, and, like, we're handing out, like, these page-long releases about how unfairly the convention had treated them.
That is...
Like...
Babies.
Yeah, no, it's...
Wow, what a great business policy.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest, I am...
Don't buy it from them.
As we move forward, like... As with the convention scene, I'm starting to see that there is a chance that prop weapons could stop being a thing at a lot of cons. And honestly, at the rate that we're going, it might be the best thing.
Well,
we got lucky. We got lucky twice.
Well, you know what it is? It's not even, it's attendee safety, because police don't know. There's an incident that happened at No Brand Con, the convention that I currently work for, full disclosure, where a couple of guys with prop guns were running around the convention center parking lot, and a couple who had been out to dinner and unrelated to the convention would park there, called the cops, who showed up with big guns, because... While they knew the convention was happening, they had to, like, still treat it like it's real until they get there and can confirm that it's not. Like, that's the whole thing, is it's like, even if they're, like, 50% sure, they can't be sure until they double check, because it could be a guy like this, and they don't know. And so, yeah. Like, I'm actually, like, I do not like, I've worked a lot of cons that still allow realistic gun props. I do not like realistic gun props, period. You can tell a fake sword from a real sword at a glance because of metal versus other materials, but you cannot tell a fake gun from a real gun at a glance when it's a realistic prop. You just can't. Like, I can understand ray gun props. I can understand lightsabers. Fine. Great. Sword props, even those are fine. But realistic gun props...
A good chunk
props,
of those phasers that don't look like guns in the first place.
Right.
Basically,
like,
any of the next
phasers behind
ones.
Me, like, you know... No one's going to confuse those for guns, but yeah, like, just don't, like, and the fact is that there were these people whining on social media about how their con was ruined because they couldn't carry a fake shotgun with them because of their cosplay that they worked so hard on. I'm like, if your cosplay is make or break based off of the toy gun you're carrying, you probably don't have a good cosplay. And, like, I don't
also,
know.
Like, you ever hear something called the greater good? Like, I hate to get hot fuzz up in here, but it's not just like for your little cosplay. It's to make sure every single person at that convention, including you, is safe and not shot.
Yeah.
So quit quit your whining.
Yeah, also,
quit
like,
your engine.
I don't understand anyone whose convention experience was ruined because they couldn't carry a prop. Like,
right.
I don't get that.
Ridiculous.
Like,
I've had so many people have, like, props break when they get there, and they have a wonderful time anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? Like, it happens. We deal with it. We move on. We can't have our prop. Oh, no. Oh, well.
Yeah, it's not like they banned cosplay, you know? Like, you could still dress... Like, you could still walk into that building dressed up like the Punisher. You just couldn't hold a fake gun when you did it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just do finger guns. Pew, pew.
Yeah, you know, what I really love is that I have seen some... You know, some cosplayers and some people have, like, taken this in completely the wrong direction. And I love all the cosplayers who did it, who took it in stride and had fun with it. Like, I saw some great pictures of some Overwatch cosplayers, a D.Va and a Soldier 76, who just carried cardboard sheets with censored on it.
The 50...
And that was their gun. That's really funny.
The 501st members who were there carried bananas.
Oh, yeah. That's even better. Oh, man, that's so funny. Like, I love when people take these situations and turn it into something funny to make people's days better.
Yeah.
Well, like, and just... also, that makes it memorable. Like, you remember mm-hmm. the bananas instead of guns. Like, that's...
Yeah, the stormtroopers with bananas, that's... God, I just
that's
like
awesome.
Thinking about that. That just makes me smile. Man, people just need to get, like, shout out to everyone who took it in stride and had fun with that, nevertheless, because, yeah, it's about the greater good, and a lot of fun can still be had.
And it's the sort of policy that you can reevaluate. You know what it is it's like, the decision was made because they just had this happen, and they had to make a decision fast. And
right.
then you
yeah.
can dial back and reevaluate it when you have some distance.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This
so, like,
isn't like
for next year.
Yeah, because this isn't like a civil rights issue. This isn't like, you know, like we're because, yeah, like there are times in American history where a knee jerk reaction goes too far in wake of a tragedy or potential tragedy. But this was just don't bring your plastic gun to a private event. This is not the hill to die on. Like,
yeah.
We should. You know, I think we should go to a merrier land.
Is it the mailbag?
The mailbag. And I think you're up.
Oh,
you
man.
Got the first one, Nick.
Okay, here I go. I'm just going to reach into this bag. I've got the mail in it. Look at that. That definitely wasn't my sandwich. Anyway.
Eat a shalit with cheeses and meat.
That I'm going to eat after the show is over. Anyway, so our first one is... Keith Shizuo, and Keith says, in honor of the 100th episode, what are you guys' favorite and least favorite anniversary or milestone episodes or specials for any franchise? Mine is the Five-ish Doctors reboot, which in my mind was the true Doctor Who 50th anniversary. I saw parts of that. It was very funny. It was funny.
I enjoyed it.
Let's see. I'm trying to think anniversary specials that I liked. Do I like anniversary specials? That's not to...
Well,
the
50th
like
Doctor
Who
was actually decent.
I really did like that. That was... No, you're right. That was fantastic.
It was about as good as Moffat-run Doctor Who gets.
Arguably, although I guess I don't know if it was billed as an anniversary special, but the DS9 episode Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, that was.
That was a anniversary special, and I love everything about that episode. It was perfect.
No, it's,
absolutely.
I'm right there with you. Trials and Tribulations is probably my favorite.
That's such a good episode.
Can you think of a bad one?
Worst. Easily worst anniversary special, of course, goes to my favorite whipping boy, the movie G-Savior, which was done for Gundam's 20th anniversary. It was shot in Canada on a budget of Sci-Fi Channel original movie and starred a bunch of extras from Sliders. And they never say the word Gundam once. It's pretty phenomenal.
That's... Ken, your thoughts?
I don't know. I don't.
Could just be a milestone. Very special episode.
I like the Star Wars Christmas special.
B. Arthur does dance with a Rodian. I can't knock that.
Right? It's just...
Yeah, but then there's Itchy looking at VR
trip.
Porn of another species.
I know. There's parts
interspecies
of it I like,
erotica.
Parts of it I don't like. Really, I could just put that as my favorite and least favorite. I mean,
good
qualifies.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I like that.
That works. Continue reading.
All right. Continuing onward. All right.
Oh, God. He's actually answering the random stream of consciousness questions I throw out at the end of an episode. I don't even remember what those are. I just figured out what that is.
I don't... Okay, well, out of context, the answers to Trey's stream of consciousness questions are...
That even Trey doesn't remember.
Number one, Gen should start eating Vegemite and tomato sandwiches, which are the best sandwiches.
Oh my god, that sounds disgusting.
Number two, I'm not sure what you mean by fade, but I think he should shave the Millennium Eye from Yu-Gi-Oh! Into the back of his head because it would look cool and because he's blonde. No,
right.
That's for me.
So to explain, Keith, who I'm assuming you're white because you don't know what a high top fade is. There's this haircut from the 90s. Called the high top fade. Technically, some white guys actually get fades now. So there's the white people have ruined everything. But if you ever look up like Kid and Play, the rap group, one of them has a high top fade. It's called a fade because you kind of do a gradient in the length of hair from the bottom to the top, and then a high top fade has got a thick top with a flat thing. Go talk to some black people.
I think what's important here is that I'm not going to Yu-Gi-Oh! My head.
Yeah, but it's also important that you occasionally talk to some black people.
God damn it.
Also,
anyway,
obviously, he should get the Millennium Puzzle shaved into his head, not the eye.
Don't Yu-Gi-Oh! My head! Anyway, also because Gen said, Meowth, that's right, I totally want to hear you guys do a Team Rocket-style intro, but I'm probably alone in that. But then he wrote us what it would sound like. To inform the world of bad conventions, to dispel the fandom's apprehensions, to debate the canon of the shows we love, to bring you news and news critiques and theories thereof, Nick Izumi, Gen Proc, Trey Dorn, Nerd and Ty, sharply dressed trio in your ears, every other week. Now sound the alarm and prepare to geek. Firsters, it's sleek. That is all. Thanks, Keith. I don't know what just happened.
We're not gonna.
One of us
that.
Is Jesse. One of us is James. Fur is Meowth.
I don't know.
The other one is just like
there. Wobba Fett.
Sure.
I think you didn't. You could have just made like one of us Meowth there instead of the guy who's not on the show anymore. Because we can't see here's the thing is you wanted us to enact it, but we can't enact it because we don't have fur, and you wrote a line for fur, and
I'm the one who said Meowth, that's right, so I should be Meowth,
right? But it means we can't enact Keith's version because Keith wrote in a person who's not here. I'm getting us out of having to do it.
I call Jesse.
Screw that. I'm not being James. I want to be Jesse. Jesse's
the
cool
one.
I'm
out of this one.
I have been working on getting my midriff bearable for a while. Give me a break.
I have not, but...
But
I'm the more assertive one. You're the nice one.
That's fair.
Yeah, like, because if we're going to break down actual personalities, I'm the one who's more of a jackass, and you're the nice one. So, therefore, I should be Jesse, and you should be James.
Yeah.
But we could do the swimsuit, the beach episode. So
that's true.
You can have that.
Yes. Huge anime titty. Anyway, move on.
I already kind of have those. disturbing the 25 video viewers we always get. All right, so moving on to the next letter. Corfan writes, subject, flagship? If the Enterprise is the flagship in Star Trek, where's the flag officer? Where are the Admiral's quarters, and why don't we ever see the Admiral's staff? Ha ha, because I did in the last episode refer to the Enterprise as the flagship of the Federation. Because Star Trek is stupid, Corfan. Yes, you're talking about...
Star Trek says that themselves, repeatedly.
See, here's the thing, Corfan. I don't think the Star Trek writer... It started... The Enterprise NC-1701 got retroactively turned into the flagship in later lines, and the Enterprise-D throughout the run of Next Generation was referred to as the Starfleet's flagship. Now, you, being a person who knows something about military history, understands what a flagship is supposed to mean. It's an admiral ship. It's got a flag officer. You know, it's a... That's not what it means in Star Trek. Some guy writing Star Trek in the 90s thought, hey, flagship sounds like a cool term. Let's call the Enterprise the flagship of the Federation, even though it has nothing to do, because they thought of the colloquial use of flagship when people talk about other things as like flagship product or things like that as just being the best, the exemplar. So in Starfleet, flagship means that's the ship they're really proud of. That is literally it. And arguably, within the context of the original series and Next Generation, it means that's the ship that they send on the important diplomatic missions. That's the one that they say, like, this is the important ship we send to go get you, even though there's no flag officer involved. And yes, it's a stupid thing. We all had to figure out what it meant because some dumb writer on Star Trek didn't understand what flagship meant in a naval context.
So what it really means in Star Trek terms is that it's the only person whose place is presentable enough to have anyone crash there.
The Defiant is a dump that got sucked into another universe. I'm talking about the Constitution class one, not the
Not the one that is the embodiment of if you had to take Benjamin Sisko's badassery and turn it into a machine, that's what you would get.
Well, since Ben Sisko helped design the Defiant, that actually is perfect. It's called.
That's why I said it.
Yeah, this is all of Ben Sisko's anger in ship form. I love Ben Sisko. He's the best.
Amen.
So yes, and actually, here's the thing. I'm betting Corfan knew everything I just said and just wanted us to explain it.
I wouldn't be,
because he's an adult who has access to Google and Memory Alpha.
All right, let's move on to the next letter.
Again.
Last but not least is our letter from Langland.
Langland. From
the
land of Langs.
Is, subject is, if pigs could fly, would you move to China? Hello, my fellow nerds in your lovely ties. I'm writing about the Wonder Woman movie, and I just want to say I really liked it. Now, I never actually read a Wonder Woman comic ever, but please don't hold that against me. I really liked this movie because it had all the positive traits of a good superhero movie. It had a lot of humor, excellent character development, and plenty of plot development and action scenes. It was a very good movie. I think this movie might have actually saved the DC Extended Universe, and I hope Warner Brothers is learning their lesson. With WB hiring Joss Whedon to finish directing Justice League and to direct a Batgirl movie, then maybe we can optimistically hope that future DC movies will be better and maybe less dark and gritty.
I'm going to take this paragraph just to jump in and say, actually, and Joss Whedon's involvement in Justice League started before Zack Snyder, the personal tragedy of Zack Snyder. It's apparently found out that Joss Whedon was helping do stuff with the direction of the film prior to Zack Snyder leaving the film. That's
is Marvel's bitter ex.
We were all wondering why Joss Whedon was chosen, and it's because he was already heavily involved in the film.
Okay, that makes slightly more sense, but I'm wondering if they're going to do some reshoots, especially since, from Warner Brothers' perspective, they now have at least one character who they know for a fact people like, so maybe they might focus it a bit more on her Hint, hint.
All right. Let's again finish reading as she patiently sits there since I interrupted her.
That's okay. The only thing I'm disappointed is that there's no post or mid-credit scenes, and I hope that's not a spoiler.
It's not.
One thing I found interesting, too, is that this might actually be the first movie I went to where I saw a significant amount of women coming in groups to see the movie. Normally when I go to see comic book movies, usually I see a lot of men come in groups, but not this time. The theater still had plenty of male representation, but it was something rather unique this time, and I wanted to make a comment on that. So those are my thoughts on the movie. Peace out, homies. Langland.
I actually did see a statistic that 52% of the audience for Wonder Woman was women.
I was of the impression that that's how it was for most comic book movies. In my experience, going to weird theaters.
It was a little higher this time around. Like, I think normally the number breaks down to like 40%, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Where there's still a little higher male demographic for the superhero movies. Women are still a significant portion of that audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Wonder Woman took it up. I think, you know, it's Hollywood has this thing where they keep targeting white males, but they always forget that one of the highest grossing movies of all time was Titanic. Like,
yeah.
a film. And women don't just want movies like Titanic. Women want action films, too. It's just that the problem is that a lot of the pre-existing action films are so male-gazy, it's hard for some people to enjoy.
Well, Wonder Woman certainly addressed that.
Was
awesome. Oh, what a great movie. Anyway, I had fun. Good stuff.
Any other thoughts or comments about Langland's letter?
Nope.
No.
Oh, actually, I do have one other thought. As far as the no mid or post-credit sequence things go, that's not surprising because none of the DC movies have done that.
Yeah, that's a pretty Marvel-y thing at this point. And I would never call something like that a spoiler because usually, like,
the contents of the scene are the spoiler, not the existence of any, you know, blank space.
Yeah, and, like, that's actually a good thing to know because, like, if I'm going into a Marvel movie that does have extra credit scenes and I didn't know, you know, I mean, I wouldn't do this, but maybe I would like accidentally get up and leave, but at this point I know not to.
I knew that this didn't have any credits, post credit scenes, so I got up and left during the credits while most of the audience still sat there, because now with superhero movies everyone's afraid to leave during the credits. Like, I mean, because Guardians had 5 scenes.
I generally, today was a rare exception, but generally I stay to the end of credits and people are like, hey, Nick, there's nothing afterward. I'm like, I know, but I like reading who did what. It's a weird habit, but I like reading credits.
Well, and like with the Guardians credits, there's a little game you could play with the credits that would shift from I am Groot to the very thing. Also, frankly, Guardians Inferno is just a great song.
I stick around because I sometimes like knowing who worked on what, and occasionally people I know show up, and that always makes me smile. That's not a common occurrence, but you know.
I only know like one person who like shows up in credits, like two. Sometimes Joe Grisafi. Sometimes this guy Chris I went to high school with, he did a bunch of work. I don't know if he's still doing it, but like he did like the CG. He like worked on the titles to the opening of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, that's neat.
He's a CGI artist who works with for an animation house.
A relative of mine did the location scouting for my Big Fat Greek Wedding. So, my apologies to the whole world on that one.
it could be worse. It could be I forget what it's called, but the movie where she hates Valentine's Day after that or something. The director writer lady plays the lead in that also, and also plays against John Corbin.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. Don't ever watch it. It's literally every romantic. It's like the worst version of every romantic comedy cliche ever done. And on that note, we should probably go to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
Now let's do this
for our 100th episode. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge has no theme, but I'm saying this like it does. This is not the theme to the challenge. I'm just pulling up the list. So the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where I read a portion of a book. And the challenge to you, the listener or viewer, is to guess what book I am reading from.
Survive.
If you guess the book correctly and send in your answer and you get it right, you get included in the Hall of Awesome.
And you get to live.
You get to live either way. It is not dependent.
Yeah.
It is not dependent on this challenge. If you happen to die, it will have nothing to do with this challenge. It will be completely independent. We do not take...
Yeah, but you get to die a loser who didn't beat the challenge.
All right, so if you do win the challenge, what you get included in the Hall of Awesome. Benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. You get your name listed on the website. We read your name aloud every episode and nothing else because it's a basic free thing. But I always feel the need to add a third thing where I say there's nothing else because it's hard not to do a list of threes. Anyways, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Archimedes, Zero, Rin and Sandy, Cheesy McDammy, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, Minnesota Librarians, Sean Orange, and Keith Shizuo. And I've been reading from the same book for the last couple of episodes, and I'm going to continue to read it here off screen as I open up a random page. I do not pre-select these lines. I literally just open up to a page and find something.
Story of my life.
Your line from the book is, yes, he would choose to die so she could live. If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com, click on the little contact for me form, and tell us what you think. Also, you know, just go there and write us anything. You know, give us your thoughts, your words, your praises, your magical hats, your Dunder Mifflin fan theories about how it interrelates with the world of the UK office, whose fake company I can't remember the name of. Just go tear it up. Do the thing you do. Tell us why Nick is going to slowly catch on fire in the next 3 to 4 years.
Tell me what your favorite Millennium item is.
Tell us what your favorite Millennium item is. Mine's the Millennium Falcon. And just... do that crazy crap you do. Or if you don't feel like writing the form and you want the audience at home to hear your voice, you can leave us a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480. That number is 414-375-0480. And you can leave us a message so it's not just me listening to the same lady trying to get me to talk about her museum project, which only vaguely connects to Star Wars and really isn't anything to do with what we talk about on this show, but she's really determined and leaves these multiple messages. And she just doesn't seem to understand that maybe because we haven't been responding or reading or playing her stuff that maybe we're not going to ever do it. Lady, give me a break. Okay, so you should also make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes, subscribe to the show on Google Play, subscribe to the show on Stitcher, or anything else that can accept an RSS feed. And, we should probably get the heck out of here on our 100th episode. So I am Trey Dorn.
I was once Nick Izumi.
I still am Genjamin.
And I was too slow to switch the cameras to let you see their faces while they said those things.
Oh, too bad.
But
too bad for you.
Yeah, it's so again, you should also subscribe to us on everything you can. And you should also subscribe to us on YouTube. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, man. It's right there. It's a thing you can do, man. It is right there. What is wrong? Why haven't you subscribed yet? Also, you can click the little bell and get notifications, and like it'll tell you the videos are here, man. But most importantly, really, in your heart of hearts and your dream of dreams, in the places that you see yourself at night, in the dark, in the light, in the magical, mythical land of that your dream that was not, is not, cannot be the thing that is the thing. And I really wish I had Gen's camera up on screen, because there is nothing funnier than watching Gen react while I ramble on like a crazy person at the end of the episode as she was rolling her eyes pretty hard. Nick, Nick, my dearest friend Nick, say your catchphrase.
Keep on Spockin' in the free world.
Yes.
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 Here's to another 100 episodes.
100 more. 100,000 more.
Nerd in Time for 100 years. 100 years, Nerd in Time. Woo.
100 years. 100 years, nerdintime.com. Nerd in Time, 100 years.
I can't find the button, guys. Where's the button? The button. The button. We did an episode, the 100th episode, without referencing the CW's 100 at any point.
Without referencing what?
The 100, one of the few science fiction shows on television.
It's on the
CW. I like it. It's a good show. Go watch the... Everyone should just go watch the 100 right now. It's on Netflix.
Oh, everybody should go watch The Get Down.
I already canceled.
That's okay.